Welcome to KKRN Radio and Off the Shelf with Miri. I'm your host, Dr. Miri Mitchell. I'll be sharing some of my favorite old and new nonfiction books about philosophy, spiritual psychology, science, and metaphysics that might offer just the knowledge you've been looking for to enhance your life. Today we'll look at two books. The first is Living Without Strain by Dr. Joseph Murphy. It was first published in 1959. The second book is Cultivating Peace by James O'Day, published in 2012. Well, who was Dr. Joseph Murphy? He was born in 1898 in Ireland, and his goal in life was to explore new ideas and have new experiences. By the time he immigrated to the U.S. in 1922, he was a trained pharmacist and a lifelong learner. He traveled widely and studied philosophies of life all around the world and wrote over 30 books. Today, Dr. Murphy has been acclaimed as a major figure in the human potential movement, the spiritual heir to writers like Dale Carnegie, Napoleon Hill, and Norman Vincent Peale. And he inspired contemporary motivational writers and speakers like Tony Robbins, Zig Ziglar, and Earl Nightingale. He was one of the best-selling authors in the mid-20th century. His book, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, was published in 1963 and sold millions of copies and was translated into 17 languages. This book has never been out of print, and it's still one of the bestsellers in the self-help genre. One of his books that has meant so much to me is the one I'm highlighting today, Living Without Strain. And who doesn't appreciate ideas on how to do that these days? Dr. Murphy's advice on how to live without strain is explained through his references to the ancient story of Job, which is a Bible story that essentially is the story of the struggle of all people. If you aren't familiar with it, here's a brief summary. Job was an extremely rich and successful man who lived in a land called Uz. By today's standards, he could be compared to someone like Bill Gates, unimaginably wealthy, and greatly respected and admired in society for being a good man. Job and his wife had a large family with 7 sons and 3 daughters, and they owned extensive flocks of livestock. He was upright and always careful to avoid making mistakes. He had a very close connection with his higher power. Next in the story is a discussion between God and Satan and true goodness, but I'll skip ahead from that. In just one day while Job was traveling, he received horrible news. He learned that all of his livestock, his servants, and his children had died due to invaders and natural disasters. He and his wife were left to bear this burden. Job was just crushed and shaved his head in mourning, but he continued his high level of trust in God. As he struggled to move forward, his body became covered with sores, so painful that he couldn't do his work, but his trust in a higher power was solid. 3 of Job's friends came to visit, but they couldn't console him, so they sat in silence together for 7 days. Finally, they started to speak. Job said he cursed the day he was born, but his friends reminded him that he was always comforting others. Yet they felt that Job must have done something terribly wrong to bring this tragedy upon himself and his family. They thought that Job was likely to bring even more pain upon himself due to whatever those bad things he must have done. Job was quite upset by their remarks. He couldn't make sense of why he and so many people are made to suffer. Yet he recognized that God's ways are beyond our understanding. Recognizing that our human knowledge is very limited, Job forgave his friends and acknowledged the higher power that created all. At the end of the story, Job's health was restored. He ended up with twice as much property, more children were born, and he lived an additional 140 years. But remember, it's a Bible story. This is a beautiful story, though, of trust, love, and the benefits of doing what's right, and the rewards that come from that. Many suggestions have been made regarding the purpose of the book of Job. However, the overriding intention seems to be to demonstrate to humanity how inadequate our reasoning is in trying to figure out the suffering of the innocents. Here is a divine mystery that remains elusive to us. Therefore, a healthy attitude of trust on the goodness of our Creator is very important. Dr. Murphy reminds us that we're all born into this world in a conditioned state, which means after we're born, we're conditioned by our parents, our surroundings, and our culture. We take on and accept a group of beliefs and opinions that then become part of who we are. We can be conditioned to a sense of limitation until we wake up to our true potential. Every child that comes into this world is here for the joy of self-discovery and grows into an adult, continuing to be a choice every step of the way. We have the ability to choose from infinite possibilities for how we grow and expand, or not. Murphy describes it this way: each of us has what he calls a trinity of creative capacity that enables us to experience ideas in form, experience, and events. Thousands of years ago, the Trinity was symbolized as father, mother, child, or looking at it another way, an idea, a feeling, and an experience. It takes two things to produce a third. First, a clear and definite thought. Second, add warmth and feeling to the belief. And third, the inherent energy that naturally brings about a result in our life. Thought, belief, experience. In today's world, you might hear it as idea, emotion, and plant, or seed, soil, plant. Murphy describes our body as simply the instrument that our mind uses, and it's the constant interaction of our conscious mind, the one we're using right now, and the subconscious mind, that's the storehouse of all that we have ever thought or experienced. The interaction between two brings forth a third, an experience, a condition, a circumstance, positive and sometimes negative. When that interrelationship between conscious and subconscious mind is peaceful and in harmony, it produces health, success, and joyous living. He writes that all of the trials, tribulations, and suffering and misery that we experience are due to the inharmonious interaction between our conscious and subconscious mind. Negative thoughts and emotions result in disturbances in our life, not the happiness we truly want. I believe that my daily practices of meditation, contemplation, and reading spiritually uplifting materials and taking a walk in the wetlands near our house to observe wildlife is a major contribution of how my day flows. So I support Dr. Murphy's advice. The first thing in the morning, we should spend time in gratitude for our life and all that we have. Spend time in nature. Celebrate the sun, the clouds, the rain, the flowers, the trees, and even our home, all that is present in our life. Then offer our love to everything and everyone around us and the higher power behind it. Let our thoughts, ideas, and activities be noble and good. If we feel the moods of fear, jealousy, or doubt creeping in, we've let down our guard. We've forgotten our responsibility to be the guardian of our mind. Then immediately cast out dark and false thoughts and affirm trust, faith, and confidence in life. Dr. Murphy describes Satan as that argumentative part of us, the adversary that tells us things are not good, that we really are full of lack, limitation, or sickness, and that the real Satan, the real devil, is hate, jealousy, fear, anxiety that we hold in our mind and body. It's important to clearly refuse entry to fear and doubt, and instead align with the background energy of the universe, which is love. Job realized that when he chose a hateful thought, that it could ultimately destroy him. He rejected the temptation to think destructive thoughts, and instead chose goodness, grace, and love. Here is a suggestion. If a wave of peace wells up inside, know that you're cleansing your conscious and subconscious mind of negative energy. There's an inherent inner desire in us to grow, expand, and achieve, to move forward, and it's called the cosmic urge, to use the attributes we've been given to expand our life and understanding. However, there are times or conditions when the opinions of others bring up our own negative thoughts and impede our progress. We might have a sense that a quarrel is developing between the lower and higher ideas that we hold, between our ideal desire and society's belief that challenges our desires. When I graduated from college in Ohio, my plan was to move to the West Coast, but my family and friends were adamant they didn't want me to go so far away from home. I could have acquiesced and stayed in the small town, but something was driving me beyond what I knew. Within a week of graduation, I had a really good job offer from a corporation in Portland, Oregon. Then my family and friends said, "Oh, no, don't go to work for a corporation." But I did, and looking back, it was the best thing I ever did. Dr. Murphy takes space in his book to write about an important person in history who studied the power of the mind. His name is Phineas Parkhurst Quimby, who was born in New England in 1802 and died in 1866. Quimby was one of seven children, and as was customary at the time for his social and economic class, that he had very little formal education. He suffered from tuberculosis in his youth, a disease that at that time had no cure. He began experimenting with his own ideas for a cure, and he found that when he did something intense or exciting, such as galloping through the field on his horse, his pain disappeared for a while. He wondered if the adrenaline or the energy he experienced enabled his mind to alleviate the pain in his body. He claimed to have cured himself of TB by these methods: intense adrenaline and energy. Fascinated by the idea of mental healing, he studied hypnosis, and he was amazed how it could be used to get people to do things they ordinarily wouldn't do. But he also saw how through hypnosis, the potential for healing the body. And later he discovered that he could heal a person just by the power of suggestion. After years of working with patients, he believed that all illness is basically a matter of the mind that resulted from a person's mistaken beliefs. He was not religious in the orthodox sense, but he came to believe that he had rediscovered the healing methods of Jesus. Well, today we recognize that Quimby was dealing with the natural law of cause and effect. It automatically brings the intensity of our thoughts and beliefs into manifestation. He described it like this: your mind is like water, which takes the shape of any vessel into which it's poured. The deeper subconscious mind is the fabricator. Feed the mind with thoughts that are true, noble, and good, and the subconscious mind becomes our best friend, bringing to us things that are beautiful, lovely, and actually glorious. Dr. Murphy wrote about another well-known proponent of the power of the mind. He was an Englishman, Thomas Troward, who lived from 1847 to 1916. Dr. Troward served as a divisional judge in the Punjab in India when it was under British administration. During his time, he did in-depth studies of comparative religion. He retired in 1896 and returned to England and was determined to apply logic to the weight of evidence he had gathered about the relation of mental cause and effect in our lives. He wrote a book, Edinburgh Lectures on Mental Science, and it was wildly popular and is still a classic in the studies of mental science. In fact, in the early 1900s, AA members were encouraged to read his book, and as currently as 2006, Troward was referenced to be a big part of the inspiration for the movie The Secret. Dr. Murphy encouraged his clients to read Troward's book, and one client who was crippled with arthritis began studying it in order to enhance her health. She wrote a prayer and shared it with Dr. Murphy, and here it is for you. The healing intelligence which created me is focused at the exact spot in my mind where the trouble is, and all mental and physical distortion is removed. I am relaxed and at peace. This river of peace is saturating and permeating my whole being. This peace floods my mind and my body, and I feel wonderful. I'm able to fully and freely forgive everyone. In gratitude, as I pour love and blessings on all those around me, I am free. Murphy's client repeated her prayer several times a day, slowly, quietly, reverently, and lovingly, and in about a month, she was healed. By the end of the book of Job, Job inwardly perceived the truth in his relationship with his higher power. He couldn't see the reason for fear anymore. In this light of faith, he could affirm the presence of all things good, even though they were not visible in the moment, and he lived the rest of his life in abundance and in peace. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and a team of wonderful volunteers who keep everything organized and running well. You're invited to support this amazing group by sending a donation to KKRN, P.O. Box 188, Round Mountain, California, 96805, or look for their donation button on the website. We also love donations of cars, trucks, boats, or motorcycles through the website careasy.org. And if you have any questions, give us a call, 1-855-500-7433. The second book on my bookshelf that pairs nicely with Living Without Strain is Cultivating Peace, written by James O'Day. Well, who is James O'Day? You may not have heard of him. He's a renowned international figure who, for over 20 years, conducted healing and reconciliation dialogues in places like Rwanda, Israel, Palestine, and Northern Ireland. For over 10 years, he was the director of Amnesty International in Washington, D.C.'s office. He's a former president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences and so much more. His book focuses on a holistic approach to peace work, covering what is often ignored, such as the cultural, spiritual, and scientific dimensions to achieving peace, while providing guidance for anyone who's interested in becoming a peace builder. The first message is that the peace movement is undergoing a major transformation. It's shifting from being framed solely by its opposition to war and human rights violations to a systemic work of creating nonviolent cultures with just and sustainable societies. He believes that peace can no longer be reduced to flags, banners, and protest movements, and instead, peace is the source of health, well-being, conflict resolution, and social justice. That's a major transformation, I think, and I agree. Peace links the inner life with the whole web of life. O'Day writes that today's peace movement has a new imperative, to mirror the change it's looking for in the world and to not wait for others to do it. Be the change has become the centerpiece of this transformation. It's a complex equation that goes far beyond who's right and who's wrong, who takes home the most money or who has the most stuff. Peace requires subtle appreciation of cultural differences and local conditions. He believes that we cannot get to peace without understanding these complex relationships. Each chapter of the book begins with a presentation of new concepts, followed by inviting you, the reader, to activate these concepts within yourself. Then he concludes with a brief reflection on ways to practice peace building and how to engage in the work of being an ambassador of peace. An ambassador of peace is someone who recognizes the importance of transforming their own inner blockages to peace, as well as in our external relationships with our culture and the systems that prevent peace in the world. It's becoming skillful in learning the art and the science of peace while cultivating peace within. It's clearing up what is not peaceful in our thinking, followed by learning to embody and reflect peace in the moment. At the same time, peacemakers should be comfortable with conflict. He asks that we be more inclusive and to find comfort in our value system and the value system of others. He asks us to address our own trauma and how to interrupt the transmission of trauma from generation to generation. Recently, I participated in facilitating a group study on a book, My Grandmother's Hands, by Resma Menachem. He's a trauma specialist. The book is about racialized trauma and the pathways to mending hearts and bodies for those carrying white trauma, black trauma, and blue trauma, that carried by our law enforcement personnel. I didn't think I carried any family or generational trauma, but after the group discussion centered on personal trauma, I remembered that when I married into a German family when I was 19, that whenever their relatives came to visit, the discussion may have started out with how everyone was doing or what they were doing, but then it would always veer into stories about how they made it out of Germany as the Russians were advancing, and the stories made every hair on my body stand up. It was shocking, and it was heartbreaking to hear about their war experiences in extreme detail whenever they got together. It was a trauma that would not leave them. O'Day explains that once peace is experienced by the body, it can be self-renewing if three conditions are present. One, when peace is experienced by some dynamic, juicy, and empowering thoughts. Number two, when peace motivates our life's purpose by engaging our highest creativity. And three, when we manifest the passion, the courage, the emotional resilience, and deep generosity that peace building requires. It lures us to become our absolute best. The emerging peace builder holds the concept of an entire culture reframing its relationships around peace as an evolutionary transformation rather than an imposed revolutionary change. Big difference. The difference is that we become evolutionary change agents and conscious co-creators of our future. This can be applied to any of the violent protests going on in the world today. It's preferred, instead of the media clips of the illusion of progress by angry protesters, narrowly devoted to opposing the worst excesses of the status quo. The words cultivate and culture have some importance here. They come from the same root word that's kind of like explains tending, like when one tills the earth. It's an interactive process. Peace has the capacity to blow like a great wind of change that transforms the entire social order, and it begins with a breeze that must stir in the center of our own being. But if it's charged with anger, anger will permeate the work no matter what we try to call it. Mahatma Gandhi compared anger to electricity. If used properly, it can turn on a light. If mishandled, it can do great damage. Unskilled anger can take many forms, including prejudice, exclusion, and resentment. We must choose peace, because by its very nature, it can't impose itself on us. Peace is an advanced state of being and an equally advanced state of knowing. O'Day has observed peace activists who have done great inner work and easily share this inner knowledge by just smiling with one another. Peace can bring serenity in the midst of conflict because it can help us tap into those hidden reservoirs of power. When we dedicate ourselves to cultivating peace, we learn to experience the power within instead of the power over. Oh, and that's another good book, Power versus Force. As the peace movement emerges, O'Day believes that we're moving from being locked into outrage to creating a culture of peace from the ground up and the inside out. We're moving from reactive condemnation of others to engaging them in dialogue, to listen to them, to use nonviolent communication. We're moving from labeling those who disagree with us as an enemy, recognizing that it makes no sense to create an enemy as a peace strategy, but instead focusing on dissolving, polarizing behaviors. We're moving from a consciousness that is problem-centered to one that is solution-centered. We're moving from an activism that leads to burnout and relationship breakdowns to one that acknowledges the importance of self-care and quality relationships. We're being curious of the value of offering a sincere smile. We're moving from the battleground of proving who's right or wrong to understanding there are varying worldviews. We're moving from an obsession with punishment to the search for truth, reconciliation, and restorative justice. We work ceaselessly to connect the disconnected. We give priority to inner work because we can see the damage that's done by using the peace movement as an avenue to vent our own unresolved hostilities. We can no longer hide from the real work that requires us not to project onto others what we have not resolved in ourselves. It's easy to get into a mindset where all the problems are on the outside, not inside. O'Day concludes that the story of peacemaking is about the relentless pursuit of an ever-widening circle of inclusion. It's truly a mighty task to end all forms of disrespect. Peace ambassadors are community builders whose vision of an expanded community is from our local community all the way around Earth. This vision is based on understanding there are no lesser beings on the face of the Earth. It takes reflection and practice to identify where we might wound or make other people uncomfortable. Anywhere from gender insensitivities, racial or religious intolerance, bigotry or hate, from excessive consumption or gross materialism. It takes reflection and also creating a clear intention to change. Really evaluate what you're doing and where a changed behavior could create a greater sense of inclusion in your life. This doesn't ask you to pile on a lot of new commitments, but keep reorienting your life around the core ethical principles of peace. It may be time to release any attachments to victimhood if that exists in any form in your life. Unredeemed victimhood shows up in groups that share a sense of being violated or exploited. When a group rant surfaces, it only feeds the illusion that something is being done about a problem. O'Day says it's not to ignore oppression. It means don't allow it to govern your inner life in any form. Do not become one who directs emotional violence at alleged perpetrators. He suggests we pause, and in the words of St. Francis, we ask ourselves, where can I do more to understand than to be understood? In 1995, Archbishop Desmond Tutu was the co-chair of the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Their work linked truth-telling and amnesty for certain crimes committed in the context of apartheid. The archbishop believed the wounds can fester below the surface and suggested that wounds be reopened for healing to occur. Developing a truth process was one way to open and wash those political wounds, to see the nature of toxic conditions and begin to heal the poison of injustice and oppression, and then follow that by applying a balm of reconciliation. He urged people to practice forgiveness and to aid the social healing process. He eventually wrote a book about his experience, and it was entitled No Future Without Forgiveness. So in this review of how to let go of strain and how to instill peace in ourselves and becoming a peace ambassador, I leave you with a preamble of the Earth Charter. We stand at a critical moment in Earth's history, a time when humanity must choose its future. As the world becomes increasingly interdependent and fragile, the future at once holds great peril and great promise. To move forward, we must recognize that in the midst of a magnificent diversity of cultures and life forms, we are one human family and one Earth community with a common destiny. We must join together to bring forth a sustainable global society founded on respect for nature, universal human rights, economic justice, and a culture of peace. If this work speaks to you, please visit the websites of the Shift Network and its Peace Ambassador Training Program, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, the Peace Alliance, and the Alliance for Peace Building. On a side note, the music you hear is from an acoustical guitar CD by the Lemming Shepherds called Symphony for the Senses, and it even comes with a full-color booklet on the Lemming Shepherds' Adventures. So until next week, may peace be with you.